We good?
And it started. So it's we got Dr. Briody on. She's in her basement next to the bodies she just buried earlier. I'm just kidding. Just messing with you. How's it going today?
Good. How are you?
Good, good, good. So, yeah, it could take a little while to set this up and everything. But I remember we said this time kind of works for you because we were saying that you could put the kids to bed. Are they all in bed?
Well, my husband's putting them in the bed. I keep hearing them. But he's got it. He's a rock star. He's in the process of putting them to bed. Bedtime was like a while ago, like a good hour. So this is a kind of typical routine.
For all three? For all three of your kids?
He went to bed like, our baby's 8 months old. She went to bed a good bit ago. The older two are little gremlins and they like to sneak out of their rooms.
How old are they?
6 and 4, the older two.
6 and 4. Oh, okay. So a couple years older now.
Yes.
And you were saying that, so like 8 o'clock, I guess, was the normal bedtime?
That's, yes. In an ideal situation, 8 o'clock, but.
I'm actually curious. I'm hoping to be a parent one day. We got a ways to go, but is 8 like the recommend? How do you find out and like learn about this stuff, you know?
So I don't, when our first was a baby, you just like guess and then like hope it works out basically. When our first was a baby, we would put her to bed at like 6, but I would get home from work at 5:30, 5:45. Every day I'd have like 15 minutes with her total.
That's it?
I was like, okay, this isn't, like, I didn't become a mom to never see my kids. So we would keep her up until 8 so that I could have a little bit of time with her, and then she would sleep in until 8 or 8:30 or 9 sometimes. I'm like, okay, this works better for everyone.
Yeah.
But now the older two have to get up for school and they get up at 6:30. So they really should be in bed at like 7, but that's just not realistic at our house. So,
yeah.
You know, we're all winging it. None of us know what we're doing.
Yeah. 7, well, 7, I feel like would be a bit early. Yeah.
Oral path I can talk to you about, but parenting, I'm just winging it.
And what does your husband do?
So he owns a real estate investment company. And so he started around like the 2008, 2009 housing crisis. And he bought up a bunch of properties near Ohio State's campus. And he rents them out to students. So he's got a bunch of units and he manages all the properties himself with our nephew, who's 27.
Oh, that's great.
That's good.
Such a great idea. Good timing too, right?
Yes. Oh yeah. He lucked out for sure. And so a lot of what he does is, you know, just passive. He manages the properties, but he doesn't have to be there every day. So yeah. He brings kids to school, picks them up from school. And then we have a nanny also who is home with the baby all day. And then she'll run errands and stuff if we need her to.
Oh, nice. No, yeah. Okay. Okay. So you have a nanny that's got to help out. I can't imagine like, I don't know how this is all going to work. How do you put the pieces together? What are your hours during the day?
Okay, so I am at work from 8 to 5 usually. So I see patients from 8 to 2. Lunch, like, so we just go straight through.
Every day?
Every day. Well, except Tuesdays. So Tuesdays are my off day, but Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, 8 to 2. And then I do slides after 2. And then triage and all the patients who call with issues, we manage all that between 2 and my staff is at 4 usually.
They leave at 4?
They leave at 4. No lunch. So 8 to 4 for them. We tried a lunch. I offered them lunch. They didn't want it. They said they would all rather leave early. So it's an option for them. If they want to take lunch, they can. But most of them, they would rather work all the way through and leave early. So,
oh, that's so nice that you give them the option. And then if you're...
There's like some laws about it. You have to give them the option. But like I did it. They didn't take it. They don't want it. So... You know,
they got what they want.
They got what they wanted. And I've told them, like, you change your mind, we'll adjust. It's fine. You know, so
now
I don't like it too much because I don't like to stop.
I was just going to say, you know, I'm doing the math now because Dr. Roth, Stephen Roth, we were just talking about him before we got on. He was telling me he has 2 half clinic days. So 2 half patient days. You're seeing patients every day of the week, except for Tuesdays. So you have 4.
So I'm heavy clinical. I see about 40 patients. Day. So that's what 40 or 160 a week, right?
160 a week. Yeah. 40 patients a day. He didn't give me a number of that. That's a lot of patients.
I'm frozen or you're frozen.
We're good.
Okay. Now you're good. Sorry. I missed the last part of it.
It froze a little bit there. Yeah. So yeah, 160 a week. That's a lot of patients.
It's a lot, but it's fun. It's fast paced. So like if I see a patient, they come in, they're referred to me and I'm like, okay, you need a biopsy. We just do it. I'm up, we do the biopsy, I send them home, 10-minute appointment, you know, sometimes 15 minutes. If it's more complex patient, like a medically complex person, might take 15 to 20 minutes. Sometimes sometimes we have to delay biopsies if there's like yeast there. So I'll talk to them about what's going on, give them some medications, have them come back in 2 weeks, and then we biopsy. But it's very fast paced. Like I'm going from room to room to room to room to room until 2 o'clock. And then
wow.
And I sit down and do all my slides.
At 2 o'clock. But then you're also triaging patients in the afternoon after two, you said.
Yeah. But the path, like, it's a slide. So, you know, the patients are waiting for their path results, but it's not like an emergent situation. Like I can, if someone calls and they're having a lichen planus flare or an ulcer or whatever is going on, yeah. I can triage them in between signing out a path report.
Oh, okay. That's pretty helpful. But then what about putting the slides together? Do you have to put the slides together too, or you have someone who helps?
So we actually send all of our stuff to an outside lab. Mm. So all the specimens come to me. My team accessions everything. So they intake it, we log everything that comes, and then we send it to an outside lab. They put it on slides. And then the next day they return those slides to us.
Quick turnaround.
Yeah, it's quick. It might be 2 days later, but it's fast. Yeah. So they do all of that. They gross the specimens, they put them on slides, and they keep the block until the slide is signed out. And okay. Then after that, we house all the blocks. So if we need to pull the tissue for whatever reason, I have all those things.
So you have specimen from like years ago?
Yes.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Each state has its own laws on how long you have to keep those. So we keep them and so we can discard them.
And then going away to, it was in Pitt, right? It was the whole Oral Path Conference was in Pitt this year, and it's Thursday yep. to Sunday or Monday? What is it?
Yeah, so this year it was started Friday morning and went till Monday afternoon. So Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. It used to be 6 days though. So they're really trying to shorten it and do more during our meetings.
What do you think about that though? That seems like a lot to pack into 4 days.
It is, but when it was 6 days, there were a lot of breaks and there was a lot of time to hang out with your colleagues and stuff, yeah. But there was a lot of downtime. Like we would have half days with nothing. And a lot of us who need to get back to our families or to our clinics, like I can't just, nobody's working when I'm gone. You know, my partner and I were both at this function. Mm. And so when that kind of thing happens, if it's 6 days long, that means slides aren't getting sent out for 6 days. Nothing's getting signed. So I can't be away for 6 days. So it's better if the meeting only lasts 4 days. And also my husband's happier if the meeting only lasts 4 days. Because if I'm gone for 6 days straight, I mean, we have three little kids, you know, that's a lot.
Do you cook or does he cook? Are you there? Good.
I can't tell if my internet is freezing. It must be mine because yours is probably better than mine.
I don't know. I'm linked up. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you now.
Okay, good, good, good. I guess this is going to happen every so often. But my question was, because you said that your husband's happy when you come home and you're out of way for 6 days, 4 days as opposed to six. Do you cook or does he cook? What's kind of like
that? He is the chef. Every night he cooks. Yeah.
But then he's gonna cook more when you're home, so
it's true. But he enjoys it. And so he'd rather cook for me. So when I'm not here, I'm not really a big pizza fan. Like don't come at me. I'm not crazy about pizza. He loves pizza. So when I'm gone, the first night is always like everyone's excited because it's pizza night. And then after that, they're over it.
I've never heard of someone doesn't like pizza. Well, are you lactose?
This is definitely my internet. I'm sorry. I don't know what the deal is. Usually it's not an issue at all.
Oh, is it happening right now?
Well, I can hear you. Your face is freezing.
Oh, okay. Okay. It probably looks stupid with my face frozen.
No, it's okay.
Excellent. All right. So, okay. I guess everyone in the United States, all the oral, how many oral pathologists are there in the United States?
There's, I think, 300 of us in the United States. I think there's 200 and something, don't quote me, that are board certified. But our meetings usually have about 150 to 250 that will go to the meetings who are active. But there's only 20 of us in private practice in the country. So we're trying to. There's a huge need for oral path in every major city. So some of us are trying to, you know, help with an initiative to bring dental students into this specialty. It's not just sitting behind a microscope, although that's fun. Like I love the microscope side. And I do think there's a lot of, you know, if you are exhausted by patients, which is fair, you know, some of us are. It's really nice at the end of my day at 2 o'clock when I'm tired. It's nice to sit at a microscope and not talk to anybody except my daughter. You know what I mean?
And that's a good point. Yeah.
and I'm still working, but I get to use my brain more without that high level of stress of, you know, you're doing a procedure and you're managing patient expectations and pain and talking to them about their diagnosis. You know, I love doing that, but it's nice at the end of my day to sit down and just look at a slide.
Right. Exactly. It gives you kind of your social skills a break for a little while, but you were doing it 6 hours, 8 to 2. That's a long day.
It is, but it used to be 8 to 4 and 2. I've kind of played with the times a little bit. 2 o'clock is my, okay, I'm done at 2.
Yeah. I mean, that's a long time.
I shoot until 2. And then after that, I'm tired.
And it's every day too. Do you ever have to like go past 5 or it's usually at 5?
Well, if my partner's gone, then there's just a little bit more to do. So sometimes I'll go past 5 or sometimes I'll go in on the weekend for just an hour or so just to kind of catch up.
Yeah.
That's pretty rare. Once every couple months, nothing major.
I imagine.
Yeah, it's mostly charting. I mean, you're going to do this now. You're going to do it then.
It's
a lot of documentation. And sometimes, you know, you just don't have time that day to finish it. So,
it's not patients on weekends. It's the charting. It's maybe some slides, but it's probably like catching up with documentation.
Exactly.
Yeah. And you're in a private practice, you said.
Yeah. So I'm in an ENT group. It's ENT and allergy. So there's
It's
called Ohio ENT and allergy physicians. There's a bunch of us. I don't know the exact numbers, but 20 something ENTs. And then there's 8 or 9 allergists. There's a neuro-ophthalmologist.
Wow.
And 2 oral pathologists. Right now we've got some audiologists, and I think there's some speech language pathology people too.
That makes sense. Yeah.
There might be more.
So that's just a ultra head and neck facility, it sounds like.
Yeah. So we have a bunch of offices around Columbus. So we're in Columbus, Ohio, and I want to say like 9 offices, maybe 7. I don't know, but they're scattered all around the Columbus area. And so I go to 2 of the offices to see patients.
Well, okay. I was assuming that it was 1 facility this whole time. So it's 2. Okay. Which days are you where?
So I am like northeast Columbus almost every day. And then once a month we go to Grove City, which is southwest of Columbus. But as we get busier there, we'll add more days.
I see. Okay. So all the ENTs, everyone, or pathologists, the speech and language pathology as well. I guess everyone's just sending them to one of those 2 facilities. Is that how?
No. So there's a bunch of other facilities. So we've got, I think there's 9 total. So every office, almost every office has ENT and allergy. Mm. There's 1 office that just has allergy, and there's a couple that maybe just have ENT. But we try to have both at each one because they go hand in hand a lot of the times.
Right. But when they need a biopsy or they need an evaluation, because they send it to your office because, you know,
they just, some patients drive, and I have patients who fly to see me because there's not a lot of us, you know,
fly it around the Columbus area.
No, they like fly from I have patients from South Carolina, North Carolina, Florida, Louisiana, Denver, like Colorado area.
Wow. They're flying in from far.
Yeah.
Do you find that some of these patients have found you through like Instagram and social media?
So some, yes, but I think more so I lecture a lot, and I think they find me through their providers at those places because I've lectured.
You travel a lot to lecture?
Yeah, I do about 30 lectures a year.
Ooh.
So I have a little break. I just had like 1 every single week until last week. So I have a break for 2 weeks and then I start back up again. So I'd have 1 in town here.
Mm-hmm.
At one of the local Seattle study clubs. And then in May, I go to the Pacific. Shoot, I should know the name of it. The Northwestern Pacific Northwest Dental Conference.
Yes.
In Seattle. And then the next week after that, so I come back home and then I go back to Spokane, the lecture.
Mm.
And then I go to Florida for the Gulf Coast Dental Conference.
You're all over the place. Wait, so just to take a step back. You said that the few times you're away that your husband and the family gets to have pizza. But now it's sounding like every week.
Yeah, they're going to stop liking pizza, I think.
They're getting pizza every week now. Now I'm like, all right.
I bring my kids a gift every time I go. So they call my regular work. And if I have to travel somewhere to lecture, it's called big work. And if I go to big work, they get a gift. So
they like big work.
They like big work. They don't love it, but you know, I just, you know, here's a gift so you don't feel bad that I'm not here.
Aww.
And they thrive. They're used to it. It's been like this since they were born. Like, they don't know any different. You know what I mean? They miss me, but it's good for everyone.
You got a killer schedule. Killer schedule. I mean, you're seeing patients every day of the week. Are all these lectures on weekends, or they're sometimes during the week?
Oh, so if they're during the week, I just cancel clinic. So I see patients 4 days a week. And if I'm gone for lectures, I'll usually add on that off day. So Tuesdays are my usual off day. But if I'm going to be gone on Friday, a lot of times I'll add the Tuesday back.
Bring them on to the Tuesday. I see. A mosquito just got in. It's a little warmer today. And that's a big one. That's not good.
What city are you in?
I'm in Manhattan. And
okay.
It was like mid to high 60s today. So it got a bit warmer. I had the window open because otherwise it gets really hot. And now everyone's just gone in. All right. Anyway.
Yeah. We are in Ohio. We don't have mosquitoes yet, but I'm sure they're coming.
Well, they're coming. They're on their way. I'm going to send this one or two over to you too.
I grew up in Louisiana. I've had enough of the mosquitoes.
You know, so what do you just for dental school, you went to Ohio State, or what about undergrad?
So dental school and undergrad, I did in LSU. So LSU undergrad, Baton Rouge, and then dental school was New Orleans. And then as soon as I finished dental school, I came out to Ohio State for residency.
Okay, and that's where you met Steve. Gotcha. And you decided to stay.
Yeah, so I met my husband near campus, and he had his business like by campus. But oral path, a lot of us, we just have to move for the job. But I was very lucky to get a position here with my mentor, who had just left Ohio State. So I worked with him. We were in a derm practice for 5 years, like a dermatology.
Yeah.
And then we kind of outgrew the space. So close to the 5th year mark, I decided like I really need more space, more help. And so I reached out to this ENT group and they were like, yeah, we'd love to have you. So I joined them and so I started out with just 2 operatories. It worked until it didn't, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And then we kind of just didn't have any way to fix the issue of not having enough space. So I left and moved to the ENT group and I've plenty of space now.
And your partner, were they there already? Did they come after you got there?
Dr. Allen, who was my mentor, was at the derm group with me. He came with me to the ENT group, but with the intention of retiring. But he wanted me to find someone to replace him before he retired. Mm-hmm. And I told him, I can't find anyone to replace you if I don't even have enough space for myself. So he understood all that. And so I brought him with me to the ENT group. We had much more space. We even had space to build out into, which we ended up doing. Then my partner, she's an oral pathologist. She actually reached out to me, but she was also trained by him. And so I'm sure it's similar in oral surgery. Like if you're going to work in a group and have similar philosophies, it's kind of nice if you have similar, you know, training.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So we treat patients very similarly and
yeah,
just because they're trained similarly. So I brought her on in January of 2023.
Oh, so you brought her on. Nice. And how long have you been at that group for?
So the ENT group, I just made 2 years in January. So I just became a partner in January.
Congratulations.
Yeah. And so she's been with me. I was there for a year and then I brought her on. So she's been there for a year. So it's good. It's fun. And it's a different kind of concept for oral path. Most of us are, you know, in schools or hospital systems. And so we're one of the few that offers kind of comprehensive care
right
in practice.
You know, that's a really good point too, to work with someone, whether it's a partner, whether it's an associate, but in a group that has similar philosophies. Because I was just talking to someone, one of my friends in orthodontics, and he went to this practice where not everyone trained under the same people, but they have much different philosophies. So a patient might come in this week when he's out and the other provider would be like, yeah, we're going to do this and this. It'll fix that tooth there. Right. And then 2 weeks later, he comes in and his whole plan is like shifted right back two
it's
months. And
problematic. Even though they're not wrong.
Right.
Now how do you justify your thought process to a patient? And, you know, I think patients, probably just humans by nature, like what we hear first is kind of what we assume to be the truth.
Right. Right.
And so everything we hear after that, it's like, well, this guy said something else.
Right.
And so you're kind of, it just makes everything harder. So it's helpful to kind of lay that out, try and find people that at least align with your philosophy.
Right. It makes it confusing. It makes it super confusing. Also, quick side note, when you recommend to whoever's taking a biopsy, but they're sending it to you, not you taking the biopsy, do you say take it right in the middle of the lesion, or do you want a little bit of normal tissue next to the lesion?
Next to it, depending on what we're looking at. So like if we're looking at a cancer, I don't care. Biopsy the cancer. Okay. But if you're looking at an ulcer, if you biopsy the center of an ulcer, an ulcer is an ulcer is an ulcer. Okay. So if you're like, okay, this is an ulcer, is it lichen planus? Is it an aphthous ulcer? Is it a traumatic ulcer? But you only biopsy the ulcer, I cannot tell you what it is other than it's an ulcer, which you knew before biopsying. So if you want a more accurate diagnosis of what's going on,
right,
take a sample right from the edge of the ulcer, including part of the ulcer, but getting, it doesn't have to be normal, but like, say there's hyperkeratosis around the ulcer.
Yeah.
You get a little bit of that hyperkeratosis and the ulcer to submit. If it's a cancer, I like to go right on the edge of the cancer. So like a little bit of maybe dysplasia or a little bit of, it might be normal, it might not be, into the cancer. Because I like to see that transition of the epithelium into tumor.
Right. I see. I see. Because I remember there was, I forget who it was now, but an oral pathologist was saying, just get it right in the middle and send it out. But now, yeah, I always question that.
It depends. If it's a slam dunk diagnosis, it doesn't matter. So like if you're biopsying a pleomorphic adenoma, and you go straight to the middle of it, you're doing a punch, fine. Please do that. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Or dissect the whole thing out and submit it. Fine.
Right. Right.
If you're going on the edge and you're going to miss it, then don't go on the edge. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's like, you're like, oh, okay, I'm going to wedge this out. And then you wedge and you get surface. The whole tumor is still intact because we didn't see enough. And I don't think it's intentional. You know, patients move and gag, and especially if it's really far posterior and you're just like,
hope it reaches tissue.
You know, it happens to all of us. Like sometimes you just go in the middle of it and hope for the best. But I like, in a perfect scenario, the edge is better.
Okay. Okay. Get a little bit of the lesion, a little bit of the outside, especially for ulcers.
You'll get like these little cardboards, like the cardboard that the suture comes on, or we, for some reason, get this like box of envelopes and it has this perfect, I don't know if I have any like near me. It's like this perfect thin thickness of cardboard. And if you take a biopsy and you put it like blood side down on the cardboard to keep it flat, it makes our job so much easier, especially anything surface that you're biopsying. So if you're biopsying a dysplasia,
you're
going to wedge it out, stick it on the piece of cardboard flat, and stick that whole cardboard in the formula. You don't have to suture it to the cardboard. You just stick it. Let it for like 10 seconds so that it sticks to the cardboard, and then stick the whole thing in the bottle. It'll keep that specimen flat, which makes it easier for the histopathologist to put it on a slide.
I see. Do they slice it first, right? And then they put it on the slide?
Yeah. So they will embed it in formalin, and you want it to be embedded in formalin like right at this, like a sharp angle. So if it's flat on your piece of tissue, on your cardboard, then when it comes out of formalin, it will stay flat for the most part. And then when they embed it in formalin, they will embed it, or in, sorry, paraffin, they embed it that flat side down so that when we're looking at it under the microscope, it's flat. If your tissue just grows in the bottle and gets all twisted up, then when we look at it under the microscope, it could be a twisted mess of tissue and you have a good report. And then you're trying to figure out, what do I do with this patient based on this pathology report?
Right. You got to biopsy again. That's the only way to do it, right?
Right.
Oh, that's so frustrating. That's that's really frustrating when you sent out a sample and it was like really hard to get, and then it was mush or something, and you have to do it again.
Yeah. It happens to all of us. Like, you know, I think it takes a lot for us to look at ourselves and say, okay, I messed that one up. This, you know, but it does. It's going to happen to you. It happens to me.
It happens out there.
And it sucks to tell a patient, you know, I'm so sorry, we have to redo this.
They hate it. That's one of the worst things when it's like, it looks like cancer, you know, it's squamous cell carcinoma of the tongue. And you're like, we got to biopsy it again. It looks so bad.
We have all been there. And most of them are grateful because I'm like, listen, we got to get a good diagnosis.
Right. Yeah.
We can't guess on this. And they're like, okay. But I, you know, it's fair if they're a little bit mad at me for that.
Yeah. How many of the ENTs that you work with do full on head and neck reconstruction?
Some of them do. So we're all general ENT. They all kind of like have their things that they specialize in. Like some of them do cochlear implants. Some of them do FHIR, the sleep apnea device. There's, I think, two of them that like laryngeal stuff, vocal cord things. One of them in particular really likes ear things and hearing stuff. And so they, I think two of them like thyroid, do you know what I mean? So they kind of each pick their thing. But most of the head and neck surgeons that I work with are at OSU, Ohio State. So I work with their head and neck surgeons. We have talked about maybe bringing some head and neck on. We just haven't yet. So
that's an interesting concept.
I have a good rapport with the ones that I work with at the James, and I'm happy with how that's going.
Would it be beneficial to your practice to bring on? I don't know, because all that surgery takes place in the OR for the most part, yeah, right?
We have a surgery center. I don't go to the surgery center, but all the ENTs do all their tonsillectomies, anything that puts patients to sleep at the surgery center. And then they also have hospital privileges and take call. So some of them will do surgeries in the hospital ORs. I don't know how often, but most of the surgeries are done in our surgery center.
Right. Because, I mean, the hospital just takes all the money.
Right.
So it's like, if you want to make 2% on that whole surgery you just did, yeah.
Exactly. So they're constantly discussing that. And a lot of it goes over my head because luckily I don't have to take call.
Thank God.
I know.
Call is the worst thing in this life. That's at least that's my take on it. It is. But yeah, I'm technically on second call right now. But I had another question as far as reimbursement. Yes.
That's a really good question. Okay.
I'm curious.
So everything that I do is medical. And so if I see a patient for a consult, we bill consult. And if they need a biopsy, you do like a 25 modifier and you bill the biopsy that day. You have to document like why you need to do it that day. So it's just a lot of documentation things that you have to do. So we do that all on that day. And part of like how I think it's successful is I see about 40 patients a day, and that's from 8 to 2. So that's fast, you know, and I am reimbursed much lower than if I were fee for service, but I like the fast pace. I'm okay with it. I feel like I am able to help more people.
Right.
And that does make me feel better. You know, I don't think it's fair that patients can't afford to have their cancer biopsied because they can't find anybody to do it. I just like, I can't get behind that. You know, if I'm reimbursed a little bit less because I go through medical insurance, I'm okay with it. And I make it up by doing more, seeing more patients per day.
Correct me if I'm wrong. I feel like not everyone could just see more patients every day though. You know, like not every orthodontist could just add on 10 more patients to their schedule every single day and be able to keep up with that and do it safely.
Would you
agree? You know,
agree. So I didn't start 40, you know, I started, you know, seeing about 15 to 20 a day. And then I was like, all right, I'm standing around a lot, like literally. So I'm ready. Like I was getting faster. So I'm like, okay, let's add a few more. And so it would just like a few at a time. And I think I could see more than 40. Honestly, I have an amazing team. They help a lot of the triage stuff. I don't know that I could see like 20 more a day or anything like that, but you know,
not yet.
I mean, the more you do and the more comfortable you get with this, like, you know, there's a lot of oral diseases out there, but the more common things are more common. So, you know, it's not hard for me to talk to a lichen planus patient because I have a ton of them and I give them my spiel. The PVL patients, which is like proliferative verrucous leukoplakia, I have a ton of them. They get my spiel. We have handouts. So like we've kind of molded it where, you know, we can safely do it. And if I couldn't safely do it, I wouldn't do it. You know what I mean?
Right. That's a good idea. The pamphlets. Huh.
Lots of handouts. Like, listen, I gave you a lot of information today, but here's your reading material. We'll call you in 2 weeks with your biopsy results. Write your questions down. We will answer anything you have. Most of them really don't have a whole lot of questions because they're given all this stuff to take with them. You know, they leave knowing what I think. Like if I see someone and I think they have cancer, I'm like, this looks like cancer. We're going to biopsy it today. And I don't think you should tell them. Yes, but I don't think you should do that unless you're confident. But I've told hundreds and hundreds of people they have cancer. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's be honest with them. Like, I don't think the mental torture of waiting a week for me to call you and tell you you have cancer is fair. I know what I'm looking at. Tell them now. You explain to them that you have a plan. They don't feel like they're being like lost, you know?
Right.
I'm like, I'm going to refer you today. Biopsy. We're going to refer you to the head and neck. We'll schedule that appointment for you. All you have to do is show up. I will call you and tell you when you need to go.
I think that's great.
So they don't ever feel like, what's next? Do I need to find a doctor? Do I need to call, you know?
Yeah.
For them.
Oh, no, that's excellent. I definitely agree with that. And then it's great. Say it doesn't come back as cancer. You come back in, you tell them what it is. It's all good news. Everyone's happy. So I do see what you mean by that. I'm just good. It's just funny because if I was to run around the clinic, yep, that's cancer, and just point at something, I'd probably get in big trouble for that. But
which I don't know. People should do. Like, I don't think if you're not sure, but I had one today, and the guy was like, "How often are you wrong?" And I was I was like, I'm sure I'm wrong a lot, but I'm not wrong about this being cancer. Like,
oh, the poor guy. Yeah.
Like, I would love to tell you, like, I'm wrong all the time. Like, this is cancer. I want you, like, see it. That's what this is. And
right. After hundreds of times, how did he take that?
You know, it's, they're all different. Like, some of them are like, okay. Other ones, like, scream and cry. Some people pass out. Oh. All of it. All, you know. Oh. And but, like, I'm there to kind of work them through it.
Yeah. Oh, no, that's sad. That's sad. And then 40 patients, too. So you have, like, people passing out in the waiting room?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no. Oh, 40 patients is a lot. No, that's a really good... That's a really good place to get to. But you need the support system, right? You can't just open up shop and all of a sudden... No, like you said, 15, 20, you worked on your team. Did your team expand, like your assistants?
Yes.
And
yes. So I started with one assistant. And then... I needed a second one, and it was kind of like a, we'll give you a second one sometimes if we have an extra. And I was like, no, I need like a full-time second assistant. And so then finally, when I moved practices, I was like, I need at least two clinical assistants. And then now I have front desk. So we're a huge practice. So I share front desk with the other allergists and the ENTs, but I needed my own kind of front desk where we are. So I have a front desk person who also helps with triage, answering phones, things like that.
Yeah.
And we have five clinical staff right now that I share with my partner. So we each get two full-time. So one roomer and one, like one person who rooms patients, one person who assists us all day. And then we have a part-time person who does a lot of the paperwork on the back end, which there's a lot of charting stuff to, like we order a lot of blood work. And so they will preemptively review the blood work to send to me. Get everything uploaded, create path reports so I can sign things out. And well, I have that five or six full-time people that are
five or six full-time. So you're saying each of you and your partner have a roomer, each of you have a full-time assistant, and then you have the clinical and then the receptionist. Got it. Right. Okay. That's a great team. And then how many rooms do you have now? You said you used to have two. Now you have,
I have four.
Got it.
And my partner has three. And we share if we need to. She's out right now, and I use six when she's out.
She's going to come back and be like,
oh, I'm like, this is dangerous. And
we got a closet down the hall.
I know. When she's out, too, like all the staff shows up, you know, because they're full time.
Yeah.
So I have two roomers and two assistants like the whole day. And I'm like, this is dangerous territory. Get used to it. It's not good.
Are you finishing? I'm sure you're finishing clinic early then, right? It's got to feel great. Just start to, you could add on another 10 patients tomorrow.
No. At a certain point, like, my mental capacity hits, like, okay.
Yeah.
I've seen enough people that have cancer today. Next.
Oh, what's been something that you've seen recently that was, like, a really unique lesion or something you haven't seen in a while?
Okay, good question. So, was that super recent? There's lots of things. I'm always seeing, like, interesting things. Syphilis. I've seen secondary syphilis quite a bit.
Mm.
I've seen this thing called plasmacytosis, which I don't know if you've seen. It's like beefy red gingiva, typically maxillary and mandibular, like canine to canine.
Oh, no, I haven't seen that part. Just the anterior portion?
But mostly like anterior, and it's like, looks like plasma cell gingivitis, but like horrible.
Man.
I've seen granulomatous. I've seen leukemia, like textbook, which is just kind of interesting. Seen a couple osteosarcomas, which are... interesting, not fun, but you know.
Yeah. I haven't seen osteosarcoma yet. What was the first one you said? Oh, it was
syphilis.
Syphilis. Oh, secondary. What lesion did you see secondarily?
So all three of them that I saw had multiple white plaques that almost looked like leukoplakia, but when you felt them, they felt really firm and were super painful.
What are those called? Gummas or bullas or?
Oh, in the secondary syphilis, they're called mucus patches.
Oh, just the mucus. Okay. Okay.
It's tertiary. It's the gumma.
That tertiary.
Primary, it's the chancre, which I have never personally seen like a chancre, but those only last like 2 weeks. And they're usually in the genital area when people are exposed, not so much in the mouth. So.
Right. So less often. Yeah. And then what is it? Quaternary? Like,
so when you had tertiary, a kid. Tertiary is the one that can turn into like neurosyphilis.
Yes.
Yes. So you have to catch secondary or it will go latent, and then it can pop back up 10 to 15 years later with neurosyphilis and kill people. Luckily, we found ours in the secondary phase, and but those have been interesting. The rare autoimmune things are interesting to me. Like pemphigus is always interesting. I have a good amount of cases of pemphigoid, so those are interesting, but I see a lot. All the precancerous things just kind of fascinate me, especially the non-risk factor patients, because I have so many.
Yeah, I've noticed that too.
Any risk factors, and I'm like, what is driving this? And we just don't know, you know?
Do you think that's been more in recent years where people just are starting to get cancer so much?
That's a really good question. I don't know if it's a more recent thing or if we're screening better. You know, because like, you know, they talk about how there's an increase in breast cancer.
Yep.
But there's also an increase in earlier diagnosed breast cancer. So is there really an increase, or are we catching it sooner?
And then the increase in GI cancers too at younger ages as well.
Right. And that might be a true increase in.
Yeah.
But it's hard to say. We don't know enough.
Right.
And I usually tell folks, like, I absolutely care why you have this precancerous lesion. I would love to, you know, spend some time trying to figure out why you have this, but ultimately you have it. So we got to treat it. We can't.
That's a good point, right? Because
it would be nice to think later.
And trace back to the history of, you know, what has your diet been like? Have you gotten extra radiation at all sometimes? Yeah, that's, it would be so helpful, right?
I have none of that. Like, you know, I have patients who are really, really healthy and they're like, I am, you know, very limited meat, if any, or I'm vegan. I watch everything I eat and I don't eat processed foods and I only drink water. And it's like, why are these people getting these things?
Right. Right. Very unusual. I've noticed that too. Well, we'll keep an eye on it.
Yes.
Keep an eye on it. And yeah, because I've been working. I've done so many cancer cases, resections, ectosections, ossectomy, ton of glossectomies.
Do you do those when you're out? Or is this like just residency? What do you think?
Just residency. Yeah. I like benign. I really do like benign. I like to do questions of the day every so often on some kind of benign thing, or actually anything, literally. As far as surgery goes, I really just enjoy benign work. I don't really like the hospital setting. You know how you're saying like a surgery center? Mm-hmm. If I was to do it, it would have to be a surgery center. I just can't stand the hospital setting and everyone's so frantic and bad attitudes. And no. I want to have a good time in the office. And
it's really important that we enjoy what we do. I mean, you can't do it. It's easy to get burnout so fast.
It is. It is. Especially in this career path. I mean, everyone, you know, it's towards the top end of the bad mental health list.
But it makes sense. Like, we completely neglect ourselves. We're trained to in residency. Don't complain. Don't eat. Don't drink water. Also, don't complain. Don't sleep. Yeah. And like, talked when you have bad mental health. Like, what?
Yeah. And then all of a sudden it's a problem and no one's looking into this stuff.
Yes, and it's the same thing because you don't know how to take care of yourself because you've been conditioned to not do it. It's
right, we're trained to do that way.
You're trained to ignore yourself.
And then how are you handling it too? Because you're seeing so many patients during the day. You're running to slides in the afternoon, which is like a decompression, but it's just a different brain. You're still working. And you come home, you got three kids. Mm-hmm. How are you handling that?
You're fine. But I couldn't do it without a nanny. And my husband is amazing. Like, he sees me, like, when I come home from work and I'm like, he's like, I got it. And he'll like send the kids into the yard and, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think having a good support system, but I also am very vocal about like, I'm at my breaking point. So I'm going to go take a shower. Nobody bother me. And he will attempt to keep them away while I'm doing that. You know what I mean? But like, I think that I can recognize, you know, when like, this isn't right, or I can't sustain this for a long period of time. Before I brought my partner on, I was working till like 7 or 8 every night. And again, like, I loved what I did, but I felt it. I felt the burn, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I knew it wasn't long-term. And I think that's the only reason I got through it, that like, this is a temporary issue. But there were points where my husband was getting burnout because he's like, okay, find someone, anyone, a warm body to join you.
Someone.
I'm going to pick the right person. He was like, okay, how much longer?
Yeah. And in that area, trying to find the right person.
He is a trooper, really.
Yeah. And then do you see yourself kind of keep progressing towards, how many patients does your partner see a day if you're seeing 40?
She's about 30.
It's a good number. I mean, she's been there for 2 years, right? Mm-hmm. So
Yeah.
So about that, yeah, almost. And then could you see in another 2 years, you're doing 50, she's doing 40, same number of rooms though, or would you be able to add on more rooms somehow?
Like, I really think that in order to see more, like, I either need more help or more rooms, maybe both. But there are days when she's not there and I'm like, well, maybe those are the days that I try and do it.
Mm.
You know? Because I have 7 rooms I can use if she's not there, and that's doable.
Right.
But I need the staff too. I need double the staff if we're going to rock and roll.
Can be done. And then could she do it too?
If she wants to. Like, she's right now she's at 30 and I think she's happy. And I also, like, I don't want to keep moving the goalposts, you know, like, enjoy what you have too.
Right.
You know? That's my personality is kind of like, how can I be better? And not just like, how can I see more people, but like patient care wise, how can I be better tomorrow? You know, that's kind of how I've always been, like, looking forward to, you know, how
right. And then
Dennis to go into World Path. How can we reach more people? How can we catch these things before they turn into cancer for more patients? And how do we see more patients? And that's just my personality. So I kind of thrive on that, but I don't think everybody does. And I don't think it's fair to expect them to.
That's also true. Yeah, that's a good point. You got to find your sweet spot. So maybe 30 is the sweet spot. 40 is the sweet spot for you. That's probably the number one thing to make sure that you're excited to go back into work every day. The same topic though, the question I had was, in that 1 year in the new practice where you were on your own for a while, before your partner came on, I mean, you were still traveling during that time, right? You did that. And when you're traveling and doing talks and stuff, you're going there. Mm-hmm. See, I like the whole Zoom thing because it's like, all right, let's open up. Let's sign in. Yeah. But you're actually going there and then you come back and then the next day you got to work. So you do day trips? You do like a red eye and then you come back, or?
So it depends. I was doing that at first, but I've kind of had to set the boundary. Like, I would go to work and then I would like speed to the airport, park my car, run to my gate to get on the flight to go lecture somewhere. And I was like, okay, like, this is not sustainable. Like,
it's ridiculous.
Right. And so now my boundary right now is I need 4 hours between when I'm done with patients and when I need to be at the airport. So
fair.
However that works out. So if I can see some patients in the morning and still have 4 hours before I need to be at the airport, fine.
Yeah.
That gives me enough time to manage emergencies, my kids if I need to, or whatever. And then if I get back after 9 p.m. the night before, I take 1 or 2 hours off in the morning.
Ooh, okay.
So, and after sometimes 9. I'll add it on later, but so I'm not like getting home at midnight when a flight gets delayed and then having to run into work the next morning.
Yeah.
At 8 a.m. And I just think that's, it's fair to me. It's more fair to my patients to have me well rested, you know? And so now that I have that, it really isn't bad, but I used to kind of dread it because I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm going to get home at midnight. Patients at 8, like my flight's going to be delayed. I mean, I've had flights, like I flew out to San Francisco to lecture. Flight got delayed. My lecture was at 8 in the morning. My flight took off in Columbus. I landed in San Francisco at 2 in the morning, did not get to my hotel till 3 in the morning, and then had to lecture the whole next day.
That's just horrible.
Yeah. And so I'm like, okay, this is why I need these, like, and I've tried, if I have to travel like to another time zone, I really try and get an earlier flight the day before I lecture so that I can get situated in my hotel. You know, before the day of the lecture. So
it's all a grace period. Yeah.
But there was a little bit of time though that I was just like running from one place to the next place to the next place.
It sounds like it. So, hey, look, we got like a few more minutes, and thank you so much for taking time out to come on and everything. I thought we could chat about strategies on, you were thinking maybe a podcast if you want to.
Yeah, okay. So I don't really know anything about podcasts. So you're the perfect person to kind of talk to about this. So there's like a few different angles here. One of the angles is like something that could be geared towards dental students about like information about our specialty and the differences. Like, so some people like Stephen Roth that you interviewed, he works in a school, he was in a hospital. Some of us are, you know, just teaching. Some of us are only doing oral path slides in a private practice. Some of us are operating like me where we see a ton of patients and slides. Some people just want to see patients, but to expose dental students to that idea early on, because by the time they get into oral path, they've really only been exposed to all the other specialties. And they're like, what is path? And this class is hard. And I don't want to do that. You know what I mean?
I know exactly what I mean. Yeah.
So to just kind of have a platform to bring different oral pathologists on to kind of talk about their careers. So that's one option. Another thing that I think would be super helpful, and I know you thought that this was like a cool idea. When I first thought of it, I'm like, no one would like this, but sort of a literature review type situation where we go through articles from journals and we either just discuss the article and kind of some good things about the article, maybe some things that can be improved, what we liked about it, what right. we have questions about, even maybe going so far as to bring the authors on to say, how was
the idea?
And show, you know, the graph, because how often are you reading like a scientific article and there's a chart and you're like, what is this chart even showing me?
Yeah. Yeah.
Or, you know, it's like the Kaplan-Meier curve, you're like, okay, I can figure that out. Like this many people died, but some of the charts you're like, what is this? Like, I don't know what you're trying to show me, but to have the author come on and explain in a succinct way so that we could use this to like better ourselves. I just think so much of research is lost in these journals because we don't have time to weed through all the scientific jargon.
Right. We don't have time to read everything now. That's why. Yeah. I mean, what I'm doing with a friend right now, we just spoke about it tonight. I've been over a year now. I take the JOMS that comes out every month and then I plug it into ChatGPT and it gives us out 5 multiple choice questions based on the article. So now it's like, you might not get to reading all these articles in the JOMS, but here's some engaging questions to kind of give you some of the points, some of the new findings. So something like that, right? Well, not
an hour long for each topic, but maybe like a minute little blurb. So like if you're driving to work, and you're like, what are they talking about today? Or like, what's the newest, you know, thing for managing osteoradionecrosis? Like 10 minutes and then you're done. You can listen to your music for the rest of the way. You know, I don't think it's healthy for anyone to be listening to this all day, you know? Just I thought would be kind of cool and helpful.
So there's a lot of keys. If I was to give like a marketing, branding, content spiel, there's a bunch of keys to doing it. That the number one thing for you though is like, I don't know how much time you have in a day to do this. You know what I mean? Like, and you can't just start something and then wait a couple months for it to like gain traction, quote unquote. And I can tell you right now that podcasting gains traction the slowest, by far and away the slowest. So the patience needs to be at the top. But the audience, the community, the following, if you will, is the truest. It's the best. It's literally a family. So it's completely opposite, right? Patience literally does win that race, but there's so many different things you could do. And what I would suggest you to do, but I don't know if you could do it, is all of it. And why? Because after 3 months, you're going to be like, this is doing really well. So you're doing 3 things. This one's doing really well. Mm-hmm. This one's really not, but I find this most exciting. I always look forward to doing this one. And then the third one, you're going to be like, I'm pretty neutral to doing this and it's okay, but it's quick. I could do this fast. Okay. You see what I'm saying? It's going to be some weird organization where you're going to like one thing. You're not going to like something, but it gets you most engagement or likes or follows, whatever. And then another one where it's like quick. Okay. It's going to be something like that. And really you just kind of have to ride out the game until... And then trying new things too along the way. That's another thing. You always got to try that new. Let me try if I phrase this differently, or let me try if I put a figure with this, or what if it goes black and white because LinkedIn bleeps out the red posts, just like TikTok and Instagram do, and then you get no views. I just put up a post on Sunday. I do that like the little question of the day, and it was like an exophytic lesion of the buccal mucosa. But it was very pink, but I think it took it for red. In about 30 minutes, it put
blood, the like gore that's blocking it or what?
Yeah, and this was LinkedIn. Instagram does and TikTok, these three platforms, they will try and censor it as quickly as possible, like the goriness of the red.
I don't know if any of my Instagram posts have been censored.
But a lot of them you have like stuff in the background, I think, right?
Not really. A lot of them are just like pictures of like, okay, let's look here.
Because then like Dr. Wahan, he's. Okay.
So like this is the post. So that's like a tongue. And
yeah.
Pictures. Less gory stuff get censored. So why isn't mine getting censored?
It was basically the same exact thing. I mean, it was LinkedIn, but basically the same exact thing of what you just showed, just a little more exophyte. It was like a.
Yeah.
pedunculated kind of thing. I don't know. Interesting stuff. So you want to stay away from things that are just going to get you censored, because if they get censored, they get no views. Nothing. But so, but like, I want to see how, if I could help you on your next step. Like, yeah. Do you have any questions on?
I have like, questions, like a million. Like, number one, like, what's your setup? What are computer are you using?
This is a 12-year-old MacBook Pro.
Okay.
I could send you all the things. Like, I got a Logitech, okay. 1080p camera thing. I got a little ring light, $20 on Amazon. I have a
here. You can see.
Oh, you got a big one.
It broke, so it's just kind of, you know, sitting here. It's a good one. It's got like this thing. Before I broke it, it was good. I'm gonna get another.
And then that, you could put your phone in the middle of it, right?
It does really good when it works.
That's pretty good. Another one, if you know that, this one is just like, it just clips.
Okay, nice. And then I like this microphone, but I had it plugged into my phone and my phone wasn't working. So the Rode, I think it's gone.
Yep.
What microphone do you use?
Those are great. This is Mizuno. Everything's Amazon. I just buy everything on Amazon. And then there's like one of the, you can't see it, but it's, oh, here we go. It's like a trackpad to plug in all the USBs. That's like $5. But it's just, I think the biggest thing is.
Wait, when you save these, where do they go? All of these.
They go onto Riverside, and then I download them. I put the transcript into ChatGPT with my prompts, and then I basically, it spits it out, and then I select like the questions, the important quotes, and then just other stuff. And I put that into the caption for podcasts and YouTube. I get it down to, it takes like 30 to 45 minutes after recording to get it on posted on YouTube podcast. I got X up there, LinkedIn, a couple things. Cause you want to get a good spread.
Cause I'm sure you're just as busy as me.
AI. You could just use AI.
What are you going to do when you go into practice? Are you still going to keep this up?
I'm going to be able to do even more.
Day one of like big boy.
Yeah, I haven't quite practiced. I haven't given it a. I'm gonna keep going. It's probably gonna shift over time, but it'll be different. I think I want to see for you, how can we make it so that things are engaging on a different level?
Yeah.
And oral pathology, everyone loves to do questions. They love to guess on like, oh, is that squamous cell carcinoma? Is it rhabdomyosarcoma? Or
is it like, podcasts are cool, but you need also a visual, because okay, I'm going to describe this tongue lesion to you. Like, I actually think that that's fun when patients are doing that, because I try and guess what's going on before I look in their mouth. But like, from a general standpoint, like, that's not super helpful.
That's a good point. Yeah.
So you need like that ability to show photos as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Because if you just describe everything radiographically or clinically or histologically. Yeah. Yeah.
Right now, like when I'm making videos, like most of what I'm doing is in Canva. Do you use Canva at all?
I know what it is. I haven't used it though. Yeah.
It took me a while. I'm like just learning, and I'm a noob, because I'm like things and I'm like, oh, my face, my eyes are closed. It's fine. Just post it. So
just throw it up.
Better than not posting, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. And you guys are killing it. You two are so good.
Yeah.
Would you try any other platform? Have you tried YouTube Shorts?
I have not tried YouTube. Steven Roth's on YouTube, and I'm like super proud of him for like all he's doing on YouTube. I don't want to like encroach on his space, but I'm not opposed to it. I just haven't done it yet. So, and I think if I do it, I want to do something different. Like, I don't want to do the same thing he's doing. You know, I think he's doing what he's doing really well. I started my Instagram when there really were no oral path Instagrams. So it wasn't that I did it well. It was just that like, it wasn't there, you know?
Right, the less.
I became like one of the very first oral path resources on Instagram.
Less saturated. I do know what you mean.
Yes.
But you haven't tried just same video, but posting it, taking it from Instagram, posting it on YouTube Shorts, just changing the title, because it's a lot of like.
Yeah.
It's like titles around search engine, because you know YouTube's the second largest search engine, so it's gonna filter things based on whatever the person searches.
Put it up.
Yeah, try it. Experiment, and then TikTok. That would be, TikTok's cool because the live sessions are where you get to really interact with your group. Because I'm trying to think how you were saying, you're trying to spark interest and maybe see who has a passion for oral pathology from that standpoint, right?
Right.
In addition to educating and teaching. So those Q&A sessions are huge. Huh. Whether it be the Q&A session on like the Instagram story, since you already have a great following there. So that people already following could submit questions on like a story. I do mine once a month.
Okay.
that goes really well because people get to ask their question and you could answer it directly in a video format. That's the best detail they're going to get, you know, and it might be someone on the other side of the world. Lives on Instagram are better because that starts to form the formulation for, oh, there's that mosquito, that formulation for, sorry, I hate mosquitoes. I'm sure you do too in Louisiana, but the lives start to formulate a recording for your podcast too. And then with your podcast, you could host events like once a month, once a quarter, where like in 2 days with Steve, where he's hosting for our students of dentistry,
yeah,
I don't know, Instagram thing. We're going to do the trivia, diagnosis trivia.
Yeah.
We do that once a quarter and that's engaging. We give awards to whoever wins.
Right.
There's so many avenues you could go. I'm excited to see how you want to do this.
Yeah. So hopefully it goes somewhere. And doesn't
and within
text you though, because I will need, you know, you could be my mentor, my AI mentor here.
Well, we'll work on it together. We got to keep it within the routine though, because you don't want to be like, I know exactly how you feel. You got to get home to the kids. You got to make it to the airport. You can't be sitting at your desk spending too much extra time. That's what I didn't like about Canva. It felt like it.
A long time. Yeah. I'm getting faster at it. So like,
you know,
on an airplane, I will make like 3 or 4 posts and schedule them on Instagram. So like that works pretty well.
Right.
So I mean, with the podcast thing, like I do think I probably have to have other people also hosting it occasionally, you know, or at least, I don't know, helping me organize the posts just because there's a lot of wheels turning.
But. Yes. There's another Opus Clip. It's a website called Opus Clip. So once you have the recording,
yeah,
you can plug that recording into this website. It's another AI website.
That's,
and that will give you clips of your recording that it thinks are like the most engaging,
okay,
or will produce the most attention. So yeah, there's so many little tricks like this. I think the biggest thing is quantity, and then you'll find the quality from the results of the high quantity, right? And then by getting the high quantity, you need it. This is what no one does. Everyone just thinks they're going to sit around every day for 2 hours making a post. No, no, it's got to be lightning fast already in your routine. So it's not, you don't have to step out of your routine to do something. It's like just built in it already. And
right,
that's where, no, I really appreciate it because I got to learn a little bit about your routine. You're in most office, this one office most of the time, 4 days a week, one day. No, it's going to be a work in progress, but I'm excited. This is going to be fun.
Yeah. Yeah. So we'll see where it goes.
Yeah, yeah. I won't keep you any longer. Thanks so much for coming on, Dr. Briota. This was fun.
Happy to do it again. I mean, we, you know, if there's anything interesting here for you, but.
We will. Yeah, yeah. We will soon. We will in the future. I usually like to do everyone either every 6 months to a year,
cool,
if I can. So
yeah,
yeah, we'll touch base. But also, let's keep in touch because whatever next thing you're looking to try, just let me know. Like, go for it. But let me know. I want to work with you on it.
That sounds awesome. Well, thank you so much. Good luck with everything.
Thank you.
Keep me posted on your big boy job.
August 15th, the big boy job. Oh,
it's going to be here before you know it. The light is at the end of the tunnel here.
That's right. That's right. Thank you. Thank
of
you.
Of course. Well, thanks for having me.
Likewise. Likewise. All right. I'll hit stop now.
All right. Bye-bye.
Good night.